Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Square. If you run a restaurant or business, Square has the tools to help you stay connected to your customers, shift your business, and navigate this uniquely challenging time. Learn more at square.com/go/snacky.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. We are so excited to be sitting down with Andy Caden, who is the owner, founder, breadmaster over at Bubba Grandma's Bread in Los Angeles. He talks to us how they pivoted operations during the pandemic, how they've been serving up bread to those in need, and he shares some insights on the recent bread making guide that he released. It's a really fun, really tasty interview, and if you like bread the way we do, then you're definitely going to enjoy it. Then we welcome back to the show our main man, Jeet, who's normally behind the board, but this time he's in front of the mic, and he sits down to interview drummer Greg Telefan of such bands as Red Hymns. Talks to him about some of the songs he's performing, how he is adjusting to life during quarantine, and the creative process that we're all trying to find a new approach to as the world shifts in front of us. So please sit back and enjoy Snacky Tunes here on heritageradionetwork.org.
We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes. What's with all this? There's something happening. The proof is true. It's in your attitude. Make way this day to gain the unattained. Within yourself, you found the meaning. And we start to realize.
Andy, welcome to Snacky Tunes. Thank you for taking the time out of the bakery and sitting down with us remotely and safely.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, bread has always been a staple in every culture, but at least its popularity now, at least in the circles that I travel in, I would say it's the most popular it's ever been. If bread's popularity can be measured over time and space and distance, and considering all things are relative, but why do you think people have gravitated to bread during these times, both the consuming of it and the making of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, culture oscillates back and forth to trying to find the optimal foods to consume at all times so that people don't die of cancer at a young age. And I think that they're right to do that, but people tend to get really crazy about things. And I, you know, sort of align with Michael Pollan here and the sort of anti-nutrition oriented or nutrient oriented eating, and that sort of in the 80s and post kind of consumerization of everything, everybody was focused very much on like the numbers and don't eat butter and don't eat fat and everything's bad for you and blah, 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 blah. And bread is, you know, was the next thing, the next villain in the food world to come right up and be taken out. When in reality, if you're eating high quality versions of whole foods, you're going to be just about as healthy as you can be. Don't eat too much meat, eat a lot of vegetables, get, you know, try your best to know where they're coming from. And the same thing goes for bread. And I think people are now on that downward slope back to reality from where they were, where, you know, bread is this, and gluten in particular, and carbohydrates in particular, are these great evils, when in reality, they're not. They're evil if they're made by gigantic corporations trying to, sure, you know, make as much money off of you as possible. But they're not if they're coming from small bakeries who want nothing more than to make the simplest, most health-giving products they can. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I remember my very first internship when the Atkins diet was the rage. Yeah. And I would go get lunch for these people, and they would be getting fries and cheeseburgers, but no bun.
Right.
Because it was healthy. And I remember going, I don't know much about nutrition, but I don't know if this is as healthy. Yeah, this ain't it.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone is always, and I think this is relevant just as a bread baker in general, everyone is always looking for the easy way. The sure easy way out, the easy way to cut the corner and not get fat and be healthy and, you know, live forever and all that stuff. And it's just not reality. You must suffer. It's just the way it goes. If you want to be healthy and you want to look like those people on Instagram, then you got to work out every day. There's no way around it.
Yeah. Just cutting out a bun or the bread of a sandwich isn't going to get you cut. I'll tell you that much.
People are very good at lying to themselves.
Yeah. So, you know, your bread is, I would say, arguably one of the most well-known breads coming out of LA these days. And you are primarily a wholesaler. Mm-hmm. With us being in the citywide shutdown of restaurants, you have also been one of the most vocal people about what's going on behind the scenes, a little bit of a peek into a window of your business, but also other businesses that have been affected. Mm-hmm. Why has it been so important to you to have this open and constant communication? And what has the feedback from the community been due to that communication?
You know, I feel like nothing's really changed in the way that we communicate from before COVID until now. There's just a lot more to talk about right now. I mean, I have very strong opinions about the food systems that are in yep place and, you know, how much people who work in food are paid and how they all, none of them have healthcare and all of that stuff. And that those problems all existed before these times. And if I had to cynically guess, they'll continue after these times too. At least the conversation will be started and hopefully be productive over the next however many tens of years to try and make this balance out. But
I hope so.
I Yeah, I mean, I hope so too. It's ludicrous. People don't want to pay a lot for a high quality product, but they're comfortable knowing that if they're buying a $6 loaf of bread from the supermarket, that the people who make that bread are making $9 an hour and go straight from their 12-hour shift at one job to another 12-hour shift at the other job just so that they can feed their families. And yeah. I'm just so disgusted by that. And, you know, even in our current position, I am not able to give these folks what they deserve for how hard they work. So it's really tricky. If I were to charge $12 for my basic, my house loaf that we make instead of $8, you know, we probably wouldn't be in business. But at $8, we can do the best we can until we pay off our investors and are able to take care of our staff in a more significant way. I don't know if that answers your question.
I mean, you have always been vocal, and you are actually sort of dovetailing into the next question I have for you, which is, you know, you are a wholesaler, mm-hmm. And your business has been affected because you've wholesaling to mostly to restaurants. Can you give us an idea of where your business is right mm-hmm. now without maybe the numbers, just percentage wise? Sure. Because if you look at Instagram, you see some of the numbers where you're like 1,000 loaves a day. And mm-hmm. if you're not aware of what you normally do, I hear 1,000 loaves, I go, that's a lot of bread.
Yeah. I mean, it is a lot of bread, and the 1,000 loaves was a remnant of how quickly we were changing directions and sort of remaking our business in the first month of this whole thing, where right at the beginning, right at the beginning of March, when things got really serious, and it was like, you know, Tom Hanks Day was and my personal and most important thing in my life, other than bread and my fiance and dog, is NBA basketball. And that went away too. And I was like, oh shit, this is very serious now. There's no basketball. That was when things clicked, I think, for the country, when it was those two things on the same day. And that was when we started really digging in to what are we going to do. Very quickly, within about a 2-week period, our 140 accounts became like 45 accounts. Wow. So then you're wondering, where is this going to end? How many of these businesses are going to close? Are they going to shut us all down? And when you don't have answers, you kind of just have to make your own decisions in order to preserve your business and make sure that everybody's taken care of. So, you know, we were down about 70% sales pretty quickly, which when you operate the way we do, which is on 30-day terms as a wholesaler, you sell bread to a restaurant and they then have 30 days from that day to pay you. So there's a lot of risk in basically loaning these restaurants, 140 restaurants, all this stuff, and then they close and they have no income, and then we're owed, you know, a couple $100,000. And there's probably no hope that we're going to get that money. Right. And that's okay. I, you know, it's just the way that it goes, and we're going to be fine. But at the same time, it's a very scary prospect when you're at the beginning of that, you know, staring up at this huge number that is just not going to be part of your income for the year. So I'm kind of answering a couple different questions with this, but, you know, sales are down dramatically, and we had to make some very quick and painful decisions. And, you know, I have this incredible group of managers here who are 100% committed to taking care of everyone that we have on staff here to the best of our abilities. And, you know, we had very difficult conversations about what to do. And the first things that we did included dropping everyone down to below 20 hours a week so they could immediately apply for unemployment. So that was the first kind of executive action that we took. And then also we dropped down to 3 days a week delivery, which is a monumental change for a bakery that's systems are all built around 7 days. And it required rebuilding by hand all of our order management system, delivery routes, packing sheets, baker sheets, all the stuff that we need to make the bakery run, had to be built by hand by our management team, myself included, over the course of about a 2 or 3 day period. So that was kind of blackout. And then, you know, from there, with the sales being so down and no real understanding of what's going to happen in the coming months, we set up a GoFundMe and ate a little shit, which is fine. And I kind of couched what we were doing by saying that I'm very uncomfortable about asking for help. But when there was no government directive about what was going to happen down the road, I needed to make sure that these at-risk people who work here, some of which live in, you know, houses with their elderly parents or people with respiratory diseases, and they couldn't, I couldn't have them in the bakery because it's just not right. Need to be able to take care of those people. That's so we set up the GoFundMe and quickly raised about $24,000, which is pretty amazing.
I mean, that's amazing. And I don't know. I think it's tough looking at a business and accusing them of taking any wrong steps during this time, if the intention is the right one.
Sure.
I know that there has been, I mean, I don't know, maybe I'll just couch that in independent restaurants. I can't talk for maybe like the larger chains,
right.
But I think the tough thing is that we are 2 months in and there still really aren't any answers.
You know,
there still really isn't, you can read all the articles you want, which I do as some sort of like, you know, masochistic punishment every day.
Right.
But it's like, is it going to be 50% of capacity? You know, can people go to restaurants and have to wear a mask? You know, are you cleaning down every surface? And when you're a business operator, especially one as yourself, that is a 7 day a week operator, it's almost impossible to say, well, we need a GoFundMe to bridge the gap until we can get up and running, because what we're going to need to do to change the business, we need 2 weeks to cover us before we go back to work in the best way that we can.
Totally. It's impossible to know.
It's impossible to know. But since you've gone through it and there are now people who have let the dust settle and realize that like it's not going to go back for months – to what it was, there is going to be no magic bullet. What advice, maybe personal advice or stealing their metal, can you give to them when people might come for them or might accuse them of doing something that they don't agree with?
Well, while you were talking, the Gabrielle Hamilton piece came to mind. I don't know if you read that one.
Oh my God, of course.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very important piece, but at the same time, I feel like part of it that stuck with me the most was right at the beginning. It seemed like the meat of the article was at the end, where she really talked about how, you know, we've all been struggling for this, the last however many years she's been open, and watching the business turn in a negative direction in relationship to the people who eat there. The part that I feel like was most important was that she decided not to take care of her staff and quickly laid them all off. And I feel like the thing that has been the sort of root beneath whatever decisions we're making here have been the opposite, have just been like, we have to do whatever we can to make sure that these at-risk people who have chosen to dedicate a significant portion of their life to us, to this idea that I had 5 years ago, why would they choose to be with me? That you know, if they're going to make the choice to be with us, it's got to be our choice to take care of them during this time. And I don't care if it's coming from my pocket or anybody's pocket, or if we're raising money from the people who care about us the most. What matters most is taking care of everyone who needs help. And that was the GoFundMe was not a difficult decision, because you know, whatever happens with the business, it doesn't change things for the people who work for us. They need the help, and we're in a position to drum up that help. Where are they going to get it elsewhere? So that would be my recommendation to anybody who's sort of like sitting there now and trying to figure out what to do. If you have the ability to help. It's as simple as that. Don't sit back and just be comfortable with your restaurant closed and your staff sitting there wondering where they were, you know, where they're going to get their food from to eat. You know,
right.
Make sure everybody's safe, and your actions kind of fall out of that. Everything that we've done has been to make sure that our people are good, and then through that, our business is good.
Awesome. Well, look, we're going to take a quick musical break, And then when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the bread that you've been serving up, the mystery bags, which I think are probably one of the hottest items that you, if you're lucky enough to get, you've been eating. And then also this incredible bread guide that is both fun and also extremely serious if you want to get into making bread at home. We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org. Hello and welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We are still chatting with Andy of Bub and Grandma's Bread about his current situation and how they quickly changed their entire operations to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic. So you were talking about many of your accounts being closed, but you also established some new drop-off pickup points with other restaurants that you've been very vocal about saying, if people want our bread, here's where you can go. Now, obviously, those are tough decisions because everyone wants your bread right now, but you can't supply everyone with your bread. Mm-hmm. How did you make the decision of who to partner with? And can you talk a little bit about those partnerships?
Honestly, when all of this started really hitting and getting real, it wasn't a choice. Bell's are, you know, Nick and JD are friends of mine, you know, in this weird food world where everything is chaos all the time, having people who are sort of in the shit with you and sort of discuss the, you know, the ins and outs of food business life, they're essential. They're essential to your sanity. They're essential to your progress. They're essential to everything. So Nick and JD have been friends of mine since the beginning. And they pretty quickly made this offer out of the blue, just out of the kindness and, of their own hearts. And that was extremely meaningful to me. And I'm sure, you know, my emo posts on Instagram have made that apparent. So that was first. And we were doing that a couple days a week. And then Proof also reached out in Atwater, but for the same reason. And it felt only natural, you know, those two places are sort of have been around for around the same time that we have and sort of have similar business philosophies and are just good humans who give a shit about people. And the fact that they offered really, really helped out. And yeah, so those were great and really, really worked out really nicely. We're also selling via this platform Drive Through in Culver City, where the platform development is doing these online pre-orders. They send us the order, we bake it and send it out, and then they have a contactless pickup situation where folks who order can just come and collect Wow. their bags without touching anything, which is great.
Yeah, I mean, safety has got to be tantamount during Yes. this whole operation. And
no doubt.
You know, all the things that people are producing or making or serving is secondary to keeping people safe. Mm-hmm. And I know that you've had to change the amount of bread that you put up, because normally you put up like 24 plus different types of bread when you're in full swing. How many loaves are you making now, and how have you shifted? And how did you pick the loaves that you could make?
Yeah. So when we were making that decision to switch to 3 days, when things were really intense and, you know, all of our dreams were in peril, we basically just pared it down to what we thought could cover all of our accounts while simplifying the process for us. Normally, we're making more than 25 different loaves of bread, including you know, things like milk bread and ciabatta and our baguette even, that require a lot of work to make and a lot of time to make. And when you're down about half your staff, because some of them either don't feel comfortable working or are live in a too unsafe housing situation, you kind of just have to make these hard decisions. So we shrunk it down to just house, sesame, and seeded, so that we had three different sourdough loaves to cover you know, a variety of different purposes, and then focaccia, which is super versatile bread. It's easy for us to make. It's in another oven, not our main bread oven. And yeah, so we made those choices pretty quickly, and then we're slowly starting to add things back up. Of course, one of our ovens died in the middle of all of this, so that's why we haven't brought baguette back. But hopefully after next week, when the new oven comes, we'll be able to get baguette back in the mix. And to answer your question about volume, your question about volume, when we were at 3 days, it only took 2 weeks for those 3 days to hit 1,000 loaves each. And that was making our bakes like 10 hours long. So the decision that sort of saved us and continued us going kind of immediately put us in a really complicated position, and we had to very quickly go back to 7 days, which required rebuilding all the same crap that we just spent overnights, you know, setting up. But now we're baking back to our sort of normal levels of sourdough loaves, which is in the 500 to 600 zone, and then another, you know, 30 to 40 sheets of focaccia.
Wow. I mean, that's amazing. And now, I mentioned it before the break, but one of the most fun and coveted things to come out of this are the mystery bags, aka bug bags.
Yeah.
Which, the word fervor maybe doesn't do it justice, because if you've gone through the Instagram messaging about like, hey, like, do your best, like, you know, it'll be on sale at 1 p.m. to now it's like, most of you won't get it. Please do not be upset. This is a contest. But tell me about the bag.
I'm glad that it's registered that the tone of my messages are in response to a lot of people.
I got the tone. Yeah. And the tone is like, hey, we're doing this for fun. You guys have got to chill. Like,
yeah, there's plenty of other places to get the bread if you're just looking for bread. This is a contest.
So what's the story behind it, and what is it? No, what's the story behind it, and what is it?
For those of you who don't know Coco's Variety, Coco's is the bike shop that's directly next to our wholesale bakery in Frogtown. And Coco's is a special, special, special community center place. It is run by this guy, Peter, who is one of the kindest people you could possibly meet. We think about business in the exact same way, very focused on the people who choose to work with us and the people that we serve, and making sure that everybody's happy and healthy and that we're doing everything as intelligently and thought through as possible. And this was completely Peter's idea. We have developed it over the time since we started it. But basically, we're programming. Initially, it was supposed to just be a way to help us out when things were a little more gnarly, where we have tons of extra bread every day just by building in extras for our regular orders. And sure. Peter, you know, was like, why don't we just put whatever you've got left over in bags and sell it on our online platform, and people can come pick it up in a contactless situation. And I was like, yeah, great. That's super easy for us and super easy for you. And, you know, it really just kind of was such a tremendous gesture. And there have been so many more tremendous gestures from Peter and his staff over there in during the last 2 months that have just, you know, really helped us out. But yeah, it kind of, you know, for a second there went off the rails, but it's now back on the track. It's just,
okay.
flying at great speeds.
Yeah. It's amazing. If you say, hey, you can absolutely get this loaf, this is the loaf you are buying, but then you put that in a bag and you say, what loaf could you be getting? People right. sort of start flipping out about the bread in the bag.
And also t-shirts, you know, there's like little gifts inside too that, yeah. that like, you know, increase the sort of salivation, but.
Oh. So in addition to, you know, selling bread and making bread, for the bread wanting community, you've also been, baking bread for those in need. Can you talk a little bit about the charity work and how you've been supporting the community for people who need food during this time?
Yeah. Around the time, like once we got to 3 days and we're solid and staffed and knew that we could continue at that point, which we knew, as soon as we knew that we were stable and that the business was okay and that the business's people were okay, there was no other choice as to what to do at that point. We had to build in some extra bread every day and partner with as many different places in need. There are so many people who, even before something like this, struggle to find food every day. So it was a no-brainer to just get going. So we've donated to just about every hospital in town, lots of different organizations all over the place. We just did Hollywood Food Coalition today, which is part of the Salvation Army. We did Downtown Women's Center. Let me pull up my little calendar here, which has all this stuff. Lots of different places. St. James Center, Ronald McDonald House, Piece by Piece, Food Finders, Heirloom, who's a great partner of ours, are doing a weekly donation to VIP Cares, which is awesome. LA Family Housing. It's just trying to find as many places as possible every day of the week that we can be donating 50 loaves of bread to feed people. And it's been working pretty well so far. And we're hoping that we can kind of make this a regular part of our, I mean, we were already donating on a pretty daily basis, but not built in. So I think we can afford this, and it's something that we hope to continue doing even more so when we have retail as well.
Yeah, I think whatever the next chapter of restaurants and wholesalers and bakeries look like, for those that can, because I don't know if everyone can, but for those that can afford charity, either monetarily or product-wise, I think you'll see that as part of the business model.
I think so too. I hope so. And I hope that it also convinces other people, or at least clues them into the you know, A, how easy it is to do. I mean, it costs money, but you know, sure. I think that it's something that's necessary in this town where there's so many people living on the street just to start, let alone, you know, 1,000 other different valid and important organizations helping other groups of people. But you know, we're in a position now, we got our PPP loan, we're stable, all of our people are taken care of. I just don't understand how every business isn't thinking about doing this all the time. But you know, as being a wholesaler and relating to 140 different restaurants, you get exposed to an incredible diversity of you know, types of people running food businesses.
Sure.
And their motivations are just as diverse.
Yeah, I think intent is probably the biggest driver of business.
Yep.
And food businesses, that if you're not, I mean, it's personality driven. You know, independent restaurants are art projects in some ways.
Yep.
And it's who's the artist, who's the person behind it, or people behind it, or business behind it. And that's going to affect what you put up and put out.
Yeah. I mean,
Oh
yeah. I was just going to say that, that motivations is, it's really interesting as a wholesaler, not a retailer, to see it, we get really clear ideas of not only the quality of product that they produce, which is what we could get as a consumer, but also how they run their business. And it becomes very apparent what those motivations are. Are they trying to become individually famous and get on TV? Are they trying to make a ton of money and you know, pull that out of their business and that's what's most important to them? Or are they trying to do all of those things while preserving the ability to feel good about oneself or what you do in the world? Which we're thankful that we work with a good number of people who think that way, which I believe to be the correct way. It's like, if you're introducing a project into the world, you need to think about how that project impacts the world and act accordingly.
Yeah. Now, there is this old saying that if you give a man a loaf of bread, he can eat for a day. But if you teach a man how to bake a bread, he'll be in his kitchen for 8 days a week until the ends of time.
We hope so.
And I bring that saying up because it is such a clean, you know, transition into the bread guide that you put up this past week, which is after reading it, and I will admit, I, like everyone else, have gotten into making sourdough and I feel okay about the loaves I'm putting up. But after reading this, I go, maybe I'm not taking this seriously enough, because while it's a fun guide, it is very much like, this is real work.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'd love for you, because there was a really funny post that you had about, like, stop asking for my starter. Just go make your own. And as someone who made their own starter, I actually am much more proud of the bread that I'm putting up, because getting the starter going is, once you have the starter going, it becomes a little bit, you're like, okay, I sort of get this. But why make the guide? Why share the gospel? And what advice would you give to people who are starting to make bread now?
Yeah. I mean, well, first off, you know, the starter thing, there's so many myths in the bread realm. One of which is that older starters passed down through generations embody some kind of special magic that makes them better than others or whatever. And that's just simply not true. And I like mythology as much as the next person, but I much more enjoy dispelling false mythology. Like, you know, that's a stupid thing. That's like a, you know, antiquated idea. So that's why I don't want to give our starter out, because I don't want to continue the mythology. If you want to build your own, it's super easy to do. It takes extraordinarily small amounts of hands-on time, and then it's yours, and you are proud of something that you made. So the bread guide kind of extends out of that. It got so many home baking questions during the last 2 months. Which is awesome. And that's, you know, I got that bug, no pun intended, myself when all of this started 5 years ago. But I think I have been wanting to do this for a long time. I have a lot to say about the process. You can figure that out in the first two pages. And I think having a good reference guide that really tries to dig deep and answer the difficult questions and provide as much information as possible, so people actually understand what's happening when they're doing what they're doing, would be invaluable during these 2 months. So I had written this recipe that I was sending out to people, and it is, like, you know, many, many, many characters long. And the graphic designers that we're working with for our shop, which is going to hopefully still open in the fall, winter, got the bread baking bug too. And I sent them the recipe and they were like, well, why don't we just do something with this? We're relatively not busy. Let's dig in and turn this into something special that people will really value, and not, instead of just sending out a recipe that most people will look at and, you know, start getting dizzy. And that's kind of just what we did. I've been waiting for an opportunity, One of our bakers, Eliza Cuevas, is an extremely talented illustrator. And we had just kind of gotten a glimpse of her work, like through some journal pages I had seen, and just her handwriting on our bags. Honestly, the mystery bags for Coco's, she's done a bunch of them. And it's just like, this mm-hmm. stuff is amazing. We need to make you famous. So this is the first step in making her famous. She did all the illustrations for the guide, and we kind of just tossed it together in about 3 weeks. And there's so many more things that we want to say and so many more things that we want to do with this, but this is just sort of phase one. And, you know, there's no secrets at Bub and Grandma's. If anybody wants to know how to make any of our products, we'll tell you. It's just, you know, I don't think anyone's dumb enough to start a business like we did.
No, I mean,
making this stuff,
you know, if anyone's thumbed through the tartine bread yeah. book, mm-hmm. you go like, well, they're not keeping any secrets. And in fact, they're mm-hmm. outright telling you how hard a bakery business is. So if you want to yeah. be, if you want to take a swing at it, by all means,
yeah. you know, go enjoy the first 2 years of like living on the edge of death you know, see if you get through it.
So I want to end on a really great celebratory note, and that is you being included in Food & Wine's top 100 bakeries in America,
yeah.
Which, you know, was announced during this time, as many awards are being announced right now, GQ's list, James mm-hmm. Beard Awards, and it is sort of nice to see people being celebrated for work they've done during this time. How did it feel to be included, and did it mean anything extra to be recognized during the pandemic?
Sure. Any good news is welcome during the last 2 months. I'll take anything we can get that's positive. But yeah, I mean, it feels good. I generally don't care about awards or things like that, press accolades, mm-hmm. mostly because it's systematized, like the there's a whole PR machine and who knows who and all of that stuff, which I thought, coming from 10 years in advertising into the food world, that there was some kind of like purity awaiting my arrival, but it's the same shit everywhere. And you know, this is different than that. No one contacted us. I didn't know this was happening. It's really cool just to sort of objectively, as far as I can tell, be included in something like this, especially as a wholesaler. We don't even have a store, which is so insane to me, that anyone would know who we are without actually, we don't physically interact with anybody except at the Hollywood Farmers Market, and we haven't been there for 2 months. But
right.
it's incredible. I'm totally, the whole last 5 years has just been incredible. I can't believe that this is a business as big as it is, that we employ almost 50 people, that we're gonna open a sandwich shop that's like five times the size of what I imagined when I first started baking bread. You know, it's miraculous. And I'm so thankful to everybody that's touched this place and powered us along and invested their time. And, you know, I can't wait to give back to them even more than we already have to try and thank them for their efforts. Cause this is not my bakery. This is not my bread. This is not my place. This is the people who work here every day's place, and they deserve all of the accolades that are possible for how hard it is to do this job, waking up at 1 a.m. and, you know, you finish your workday when most people are heading in. It's a very surreal way to live, and some people love it, and we're lucky enough to have a bunch of them here, and it makes me feel incredible.
Amazing. Well, Andy, thank you so much for taking so much time to chat with us. If people want to follow along and try to roll the dice and tempt fate with the mystery bags, where can they go to follow along?
The best place to see what's going on with us is on Instagram, which is Bub and Grandma's Bread. As much as I sort of despise Instagram, I still have to use it, and I try my best to make everything we do there interesting. We're doing cocoa bags or mystery bags with Coco's on Wednesday, Friday, Sunday. Tuesdays we're selling direct at Proof, and Saturdays we're selling direct at Bell's Bagels.
Amazing. Well, we have another song from the archives and a live performance here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Take me to Hawaii, drive me safely in the air. We will have children as they pull upon my hair. Talk to me neurotic, watching all the people stare. We're too young to be this happy, they're too old to understand. Whoa.
This episode is brought to you by Square. We all know that this is an incredibly challenging time for our friends running restaurants and small food businesses. With social distancing in place, people are staying home and eating in, and restaurants have had to pivot to pickup and delivery only. HRN would usually be recording our podcast from our studio inside Roberta's, but since they've had to close their dining room, they've ramped up their frozen pizza production, set up a wine and grocery shop, and seen their delivery orders skyrocket. Like Roberta's, many restaurants have been changing offerings day by day as they figure out how to best serve their customers. If you run a restaurant or a small business, Square has the tools to help you adapt. One of these tools is the Square Online Store. It lets you set up a free online ordering page with curbside pickup and local delivery so you can keep customers safe. You can deliver orders yourself or integrate with delivery partners. Its Order Hub lets you manage all your incoming orders in one place, no matter which delivery partners you choose to use. Square has all the tools to help you stay connected to customers, no matter where they are. See everything that's available by visiting square.com/go/snacky.
All right, welcome to Snacky Tunes. This is Jeet, and I am here with a good friend of mine and singer-songwriter, Greg Telfayon. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. Thanks for asking. Thanks for having me on the show, and I can't complain. This is it's trying times for most of the world, working from home and just being creative and, you know, finding ways to be more productive.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. You want to, like, let's give everybody like a little introduction. Why don't you let everybody know who you are and what you do?
Sure. Again, name's Greg Telfayon. I am I'm a drummer for a band called Red Hymns and a band called Prolaya, and I'm a singer-songwriter, playing in the scene, if there was a scene.
Right. Because, like, with the whole COVID situation, have you found any kind of difference in the attitude of people, like, as far as, like, because we can't go out anymore. There's no scene happening. Like, have you felt any difference?
Yeah, man. I don't think there's really a middle. It's like, you know, either you're ultra conservative or you're going to push yourself like beyond your limits to be able to connect with people or like keep your band in check and mentally get them and, you know, try to inspire them to take new avenues of playing, meaning, you know, everything being virtual, mm-hmm. kind of, you know, migrate over to the platforms that are available to us for us to get more done. But I'm finding it a lot of resistance in that, where for me to be able to push myself is one thing, but for me to hold somebody else's hand is another. When those guys are totally capable of doing it, it's just a matter of them actually doing it.
Yeah, what's that like? Like, what's it been like to not jam with these guys who you've been jamming with for so long?
It sucks, dude. You know, it does. I really love jamming together. Yeah. That's the thing. That's really the only thing that's different about my life right now for me is, you know, 3 times, 4 times a week, I'd be jamming with my guys. And now I'm not, you know, that's the big difference. Otherwise, being at home, being with my dogs and my girlfriend, it's been great. It really has. But, you know, I used to look forward to going to practice every week and, you know, every other day. So now I'm taking the initiative on my own to be creative, come up with, you know, figure out how I can record and perform on live on the internet. Now I've had this set up. I finally got it down. So it's like just pushing myself to be able to adapt to what's going on.
You started you're primarily a drummer. So what was the motivation to pick up a guitar and like just start singing and writing music on your own?
You know what it is, man? And I'm not trying to sound like all like philosophical and shit. We're born with gifts, right? Like, you're a singer-songwriter. You play multiple instruments as well. So if you have an idea, right, and you have a full thought where you have the guitar idea, you have the vocal idea, you have a rhythm idea, you want to get that full thought across. I've always been an initiator, and I've always, you know, since I was in 10th grade, I've picked up the guitar, and I write for my bands. Like, it's just part of who I am. So if I have an idea, I need to get it out. And if I can just show you instead of explaining to you verbally,
yeah,
you know, that's going to be way faster. And what does that take?
Do you
go ahead?
Yeah. Do you remember, like, it sounds like you've been writing and like had compositional ideas in your head for a long time, and you would apply or you would like try to implement that in the bands that you were playing drums for. But was there like a pivotal point where like you were like, you know what, I've been doing this for the bands that I'm drumming in for so long, like I can just do this for me?
Good question. And you'll be able to remember this. It's when we were when we started recording together on solo material, because when my father passed away, it's been 3 years mm-hmm. now, going on 3 years August. I just remember him saying to me, and this is something that it wasn't because he was just my dad saying it. He really liked my music, like the songs I'd write, and I'd show him. I'd be like, Dad, what do you think? FaceTime him, and I'd, you know, that was it. When he passed away, it was like, you know what? I need to do this.
What's the first song you're going to play for us?
In Being.
Nice. All right, here we are on Snacky Tunes.
True.
Ever since you started being a solo performer, you've done a few performances over the years, right?
I actually did one performance, and it was an experience, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah? How so?
In the fact that I've never done it before. So I had a friend reach out to me with a business, and he's like, hey, man, you want to come down and do some songs? So I literally did like an hour and a half of some covers and my originals, and just to put myself out there, man, just to not even like, hey, look at me. It's like, hey, I could do this, you know? You got to push yourself and like do things that you're uncomfortable doing. And it was a bar setting. It wasn't like there was a stage.
But what was that, what were the feelings going on in your head? Like, you know, versus being a drummer for the band where you're kind of like setting the foundation. Now it's you right up front.
It's a good question. I was kind of nervous. I mean, a lot of people were there. And then not only that, you know, I wanted to warm up, like, right, so mm-hmm. I wouldn't, you know, get hoarse. Because, again, listen, I'm not, like, a singer. Like, I was in chorus my whole life, and I knew how to do warm-ups and stuff. You taught me stuff. But yeah, the feeling, I guess, was just like, don't fuck up. And if you do, like, whatever, and have fun. And just enjoy the experience, because, you know, I feel the most comfortable is when I'm performing. It's like, it's weird. It's like people get nervous when they go in front of people. Like, that's when I feel like I'm where I'm supposed to be.
Have you considered doing any virtual performances?
Absolutely. I mean, as we talk right now, you know, before this, this thing, you know, it was planning out, you know, a way to be able to connect with my demographic, and that's going to be through vlogging and podcasting and performing online. So this, again, you know, is a traumatic amount of events that are going on right now in the world. But, you know, my world before all this, that's something that I know I have to do. This is something that is important to me.
What do you think the music industry is going to look like after COVID then?
Well, I think there'll be a surge in online and virtual performances like you're seeing now. Mm-hmm. I think that you know, it's gonna be like, you know, musicians like me and you, like, having to come up with strategies that are outside of the norm. But again, think about this is mm-hmm. the weird part. If we can't rise above that, I mean, it is gonna get back to where we can get together for practice again, but there is a new normal now, and that new normal is really, especially for me, man, like, it's really doing things on my own and taking an initiative of keeping the creativity going.
So what's the next song you're going to play for us?
Probably do Your Thoughts. And it sucks, man. I want to do it with you on piano too.
We'll do it someday. We'll do a little collab.
Choose, it's right. rest of the truth to deny.
Something I've always wanted to ask you is, you know, again, you said you were primarily a drummer, but now you're doing a lot of singer-songwriter, guitar stuff. Have you found that your drumming feeds into your songwriting and vice versa?
Absolutely. It always has. So drumming has allowed me to be a better songwriter in the sense of composition, right? So it's like, I think, you know, when it comes to music, you can have three chords and you could play those three chords the whole entire song, right? Some of the mm-hmm. best songs are just three chords. And mm-hmm. the drums are all evolving. You know, the drums stay pretty consistent, but they evolve. Like, you know, there's variations. And I think vocals are the same in the fact that with production, it's one of those things where you can get a good understanding of, I play to the guitar, I play to the bass guitar. So the bass drum's hitting with the bass, right? Usually matching on the root notes. And then you have mm-hmm. the guitar, which is playing a foundation, but it's also kind of an extension of that bass with a little more melody on there. And then it's the vocals, you know, what melody I'm coming up with. And then when the drums evolve, the vocals start evolving. And then the music I add, you know, after recording a first track or the foundation, you could start adding leads and then building that production of that song. But it really always started out with the foundation of rhythm. And then and then at the same time, when I started writing on the acoustic, like I'll have these ideas on acoustic that have nothing to do with drums at all, but it's the melody that's coming in. And then I can reverse engineer it right back to the drums, and right away I know exactly what to do. So it's like on the other spectrum of it, it's like getting off from the drum kit and getting on the guitar and hashing out my ideas. When I get on the drum set, there's a really good idea of where that song is, and like it all just comes together so much easier, as opposed to you not being a drummer and you're jamming as a guitar player with your ideas and really not knowing how to hash out your drum parts, which literally help write music, right?
Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I think on both sides, it's like an experience.
And you just came out with an EP, you said, with your band Red Hymns, right?
Correct, Volume 4, yep.
So you just came out with that. So what's next for Greg Talfayan?
Well, I mean, Red Hymns had a huge year lined up for playing out live and really good shows, which we have not been able to do, obviously. Figuring out what we're going to do on that front as a band, right? Mm-hmm. And then just, I'm going to keep recording. You know, I only recorded two songs and released them. I mean, but I have a bunch more, and I'm sure you'll be hearing them from me. Really coming out with some really, really good content and a strategy and like a podcast, a blog that's going to encapsulate all these things that we're discussing right now. Nice. And then just make it really, really creative in the fact of like unique towards what I'm interested in, you know. Probably see a lot more of that from me in the coming months. And I'm into personal development, so I'll be, you know, there's a huge personal development angle to what we do. And it's having the right mindset to be able to do it in the first place. And a lot of people just, they don't take initiative, and it's like, okay, why aren't you doing that? Like, why, well, ask yourself, why aren't you doing what you want to do? And it's because you're getting in your own way, and your mind will help you, won't help you one bit do what you actually want to do. You actually have to be like, you have to be above that thought and say, okay, my mind isn't going to help me, but my heart is in the right place. So I just need to take that initiative and just push myself. So you're going to see me coming out with things in, you know, that I've never had before, and trying different things with different artists and collaboration. And then hopefully, you know, in the 2021, you know, there'll probably be a big burst of touring again and back to that. So I want to set up all this virtual stuff and being able to do this, and then parlay it into being able to do it live as well.
So where's the best place people can find you if they want to, you know, kind of see you come out with these new things?
You're going to see it on my YouTube channel. You could find me on Spotify and all the major platforms. But whatever I do comes out on my site. So you can go to gregtalfayon.com. And that's nice. For everything I do. It, you know, it basically takes my social media and pumps it through there, so you can see everything I'm doing for every project that I'm working on.
Perfect. And what's the last song, dude?
Figure Out.
Figure Out. Love it. This is Figure Out with Greg Talfayon on Snacky Tunes. Thanks for being on, buddy.
No problem. Thanks for having me, man.
Try to move your feet from the throne. Take a look, it's there when you're alone. And you wanna feel what's so real, but can't catch up. You have to deal, and you can't explain, but it goes your way now. Be the one who leads us from the norm. Learn and leave the lessons you have known now. Try to be from memories that don't fulfill your best needs. Can't explain, but it goes your way now. And all the things you never thought you'd say, begin again, begin again. You never say, yeah.
This program is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody. I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.